to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America, and welcome to our show today. It is Thursday, February 4th, 2010 here. We're counting down to Super Bowl Sunday. And speaking of scores and so forth going back and forth here, obviously did not have a very good day on the stock market. Now, normally I've sort of gotten out of the habit of talking about the Dow Industrials as not really being all that connected with real-life economics out here in the heartland, as it were. But today, it really got kind of bad. And the situation here is that it actually dipped back into the 9,000s just before the close of the bell today. And at the last second, some buying came through and shoved it back into the 10,000 market. But we may see a continuing of the drop and decline. Remember, it's been dropping all January. And it may dip into the 9,000s again tomorrow, which is going to put everybody in a bad mood for Super Bowl weekend. But the bottom line here is the Dow Industrial Averages, the stock market as a whole, has been used by the Obama administration, just as it was used by the Bush administration, and before that, the Clinton administration. That's the banner they wave at everybody. If the Dow is doing fine, then, you know, obviously the economy must be good, and if you're losing your home and your business and whatever, it must be your fault, so please don't complain to the government, because obviously if Wall Street is doing wonderfully well, then things are just fine, and you're just being a whiner and everything, so forth and so on. Now, of course, longtime listeners and longtime readers know about the Plunge Protection Team. This goes back at least to the Clinton years. They call it the President's Special Working Group on the Markets. Was originally covert, and the existence of the PPT was exposed by the New York Post's John Crudell, who basically exposed the operation and what was going on, which was that through Goldman Sachs, huge put options were being put on the indicator issues for the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P in order to drive the numbers back up and make it look like the market was doing really well. Now we're beginning to find out that more and more of the Dow market behavior for all three of the markets is being controlled and dominated by these high-speed computer trading systems that Goldman Sachs and some of the other brokerages have been allowed to use again, even though they were behind the stock market dip in the 1980s, and they were banned for pretty much everybody. There are some estimates that 60% of the volume we're seeing on the stock market as a whole is coming out of just these handful of these large brokerages with these computerized trading systems that are churning up volume and attempting to churn up artificial demand to keep the market propped up. But it looks like it's beginning to fail because the market's starting to come back down. Now, over at TrimTabs, their CEO is expressing the opinion that the government is buying up the stock market. They may be using some of that TARP money or bailout money or some of that $27 trillion that they have basically borrowed from the Federal Reserve and expect you to pay back somewhere down the road. And they're buying up the stock market to keep prices up, to keep the market from falling. Because if that's their banner, if that is their banner and that collapses, then everybody's going to say the economy really is messed up and it really is the federal government's fault. And I do have a right to blame them for having put us into this circumstance here. Now, speaking of the government and being able to point fingers, the House of Representatives today voted to permit an increase in the debt ceiling, another $1.9 trillion. Ever gone to a used car lot? All the prices end in 9. They don't want to roll over that next big digit. So we're selling you this car for $19.99. So you see that first digit number 1 and figure, okay, that's not such a bad price, as opposed to rolling up the number and it goes to 2,000 and then people are a little less eager to buy the car. And that's why you see all these 1980 and 1990 prices or $29.99 ending in 9s on the used car lots. It's a sales tool, and that's what they did. The debt was increased by $1.9 trillion, so people aren't really looking at the fact that what they're really talking about here is effectively $2 trillion of additional debt on your head, on your children's head. And, of course, the House had to do it. They were following the Senate, which authorized the debt, because if they didn't vote through the increase in debt, if they didn't agree to go out and borrow more money than they've got, the government would have started defaulting on some of their checks basically at the end of this month. They're not even making it through to the end of the fiscal year. And so the bottom line is, again, the government cannot balance its books. They're talking about a record budget deficit this year, the total indebtedness. Nobody even really knows anymore. You know, it's somewhere above $20, $30 trillion. Nobody knows. The government is fudging the books. Now, speaking of fudging the books, we're looking at new unemployment numbers coming out, and again, we're continually hearing this thing. Well, it was unexpected. We weren't expecting the numbers to be this bad, which undermines the credibility of anything coming out of the government as if they had anything left. Because if they can't accurately predict what's going to happen, then they don't know what's going on, and they're certainly not in a position to be able to fix anything. Maybe this all this wishful thinking about, if we just tell them the economy's going to get better, they'll go out and work harder, and they'll make the economy better, and we can take credit for it, and so forth and so on. But the bottom line is, the unemployment numbers are continuing to go up. People are losing their jobs. They're not getting them back. Okay? The number of newly laid off workers filing initial claims for jobless benefits rose higher than the so-called experts were expecting. Now, the total unemployment numbers are beginning to come into question. We've had the government saying, you know, it's about 9%. Remember what I told you about the used car lots? They don't want to say it's 10%. That's a bad number. But as long as they say it's 9%, well, it's not too bad. We have been saying for many months now that we think the real unemployment level is probably 17%, could be as high as 20%. 25%, that's Depression-era levels of unemployment. Now we're beginning to get indications that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is not really counting unemployed people. They're engaging in statistical analyses. And they're going from all of these various estimations. They have this wonderful word called seasonal adjustment, which is just government speak for, we're going to fudge the numbers to get what we think is going to look good for the suckers. I mean, for the voters here. But the bottom line is, we don't have an accurate, reliable number coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We have more wishful thinking. We have more numbers that the government thinks aren't going to look all that bad and get people upset. Now we're finding out that one of the statistical tricks that they have been doing is called the birth-death model. And what it is, this is what we call a SWAG, which is an acronym for a scientific wild-ass guess on how many new businesses are being created and how many companies are going out of business. And that's a very hard number to track. In fact, they're basically guessing. They're guessing at it, and they're using these guesses to massage the available unemployment claims data to try and arrive at something that is somehow acceptable or not. Personally, I think they ought to just be publishing the raw data about filings for unemployment claims and just let it go at that. Okay, or obviously in the case of people who are under regular employment, just look at how many, you know, are the employee taxes being paid or not? And if they're not, then they're not employed. You could go out and between small businesses and the W-4s and the money coming in on the employee taxes, you could get a good measure. But, you know, the government doesn't want accurate statistics about anything, because then it's going to start calling attention to the fact the statistics are not very good. But this birth-death model, it is looking more and more like it's just another way of the government trying to massage the data into something that is kind of acceptable to the public. But we're not getting accurate data. One of the people reporting about this is John Crudell out of the New York Post. And as I mentioned before, this was the guy who blew the whistle on the PPT many, many years ago. So we get good information from John Crudell. He's broken very important stories about the way the government mismanages the economy and mismanages the economic data. And we're beginning to see that more and more. All right, we're coming down to the end of this first segment here. And the chat room is open. The webcam is running. People are already signing in on Ustream to take a look at us. Oafman's in the control room. Our phone lines are open. 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. And as we come down to the bottom of the hour, when we come back, we're going to be looking at some very important news regarding Bank of America. They're taking a major hit. Looks like maybe they haven't been playing by the rules in a couple of different areas around there. More signs of economic deterioration, more signs that we have not even begun to see the bottom of this federal government created economic disaster. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And as we mentioned before, we went to the break here. We're seeing more and more indications that the economy of the United States is basically slowing way, way down. We're seeing this situation where city and county governments are running out of money. And we've been in this habit for a long time of paving all of our roads in the United States with these materials that wear out very quickly. And it doesn't sound like a very smart thing to do until you realize that the state and local governments can then go back to the union contractors every election year and give them a bunch of work going out and paving the roads again. And so it's just another way of taking money from the taxpayer and giving it to the cronies in exchange for voting and political support, so forth and so on. So we have roads in this country whose lifespan is only a few years. Now, contrast that with places like Germany, where all of their roads are made with cement. And as a result, they last 50 years. There are roads right now in Germany, still in use, that were laid down when Adolf Hitler was in charge of the place. And they don't need repairing. They're very, very well-built roads, but we don't get that in the United States. Now, because of all this really cheap construction and cheap patch maintenance that we've seen over the last 10, 20 years, and the roads are falling apart, now that the economy is in the Al-Qaeda, cities and counties are finding they don't have the money to repair the roads anymore with that same thing. Now they're just going to put gravel down on some of the more outlying roads. We're going back to the days of gravel roads. That is a telling sign of the decline of America, decline and fall of the United States here. Now, as I mentioned, and I know we've got callers waiting on the line, I'm going to get to you real soon. Bank of America has hit a couple of double whammies. They are being sued by the New York State Attorney General for fraud and deception in acquiring billions of dollars in taxpayer bailout money used to acquire Merrill Lynch. I remember when that deal was coming down, and everybody said, well, if B of A is in so much trouble that it needs all this money to save itself, why are they turning around with this money and doing these major acquisitions? Now they're being investigated and sued for fraud. They defrauded the American taxpayers to go out and buy Merrill Lynch, and then they put huge bonuses in their pockets, and a lot of people at Merrill Lynch lost their jobs, as tends to be the case in these mergers and acquisitions. So Andrew Cuomo is out there basically going after B of A. Now, that's not B of A's only problems. In Italy, Bank of America has seized $102 million of assets from Bank of America Corporation and a unit of Dexia S.A. as part of a probe into yet another fraud involving derivatives. So B of A is just, they're getting all of this from all sides. I would expect that their stock is going to drop. I would expect probably a lot of people are going to cancel their business with Bank of America. I mean, if you've got a credit card with Bank of America right now, just think about it. If B of A gets sued by New York, they're not going to take that money out of their own pocket. They're going to raise their fees, and they're going to raise interest on the credit cards. We've been seeing banks do that all along. So you may want to think about paying down your balances on the B of A credit cards. And just keep a very, very careful eye. Meanwhile, of course, the message this is sending to the rest of the world is that American businesses and American banks and all the rest, they're all corrupt. They're all frauds. They're all crooks. It started with Bernie Madoff and all these other Ponzi schemes that are being uncovered. And there are so many of them now, the media doesn't even want to report on all of them. They only report on the big ones. The little ones are sort of beneath notice. It's no longer newsworthy when another brokerage firm or another bank gets nailed in another fraud or Ponzi scheme. It's part of the background noise. But B of A is iconic. And to be hit twice at pretty much the same time involving fraud and derivatives fraud, that's sending a really, really bad message to the rest of the world. State Farm Insurance down in Florida applied for an increase in premiums And when they did not get it, they sent cancellation notices to 125,000 of their homeowner insurance policies, halfway through the hurricane season and in the high-risk areas. Basically, the insurance company is saying, well, if you're not going to pay, give us more money, we're not going to insure the people who most need insurance, which is a common situation you see with auto insurance and with health insurance. You know, back when auto insurance was not mandatory, the idea was that they're happy to sell you insurance if you could prove you were never going to need it. And the same thing with the health insurance. Health insurance is available and affordable if you can prove you're never really going to need it. Once it becomes mandatory, of course, then it goes up. In this case, you know, the people in South Florida, State Farm is just leaving them in a lurch. They've been taking all the premiums up to this point, and now they're simply saying, deal's off, right in the middle of hurricane season. The only part of the economy around the world which is not suffering the effects of the recession is military spending. It has not shown a single indication of slowdown or inconvenience from the economic hardships. We're on a war footing. The defense companies, the bomb makers, the bullet makers, the tank makers, they're pulling in the dough like crazy. They're going like gangbusters. Everybody else is starving, but the people who make the machinery of death, they're doing great. We're going to go to the phones. Clarence in Oklahoma. Osseo, what's on your mind?
Well, I just I've been experiencing as a retired federal grunt. And believe me, you worked for the government at one time. Not everybody is a high-paid GS, you know, 800,000 or whatever.
That was certainly true in my case, yes.
I started out as a GS-3, and I retired as a WG-6, which is roughly equivalent to, depending on the step, about a mid-step GS-7. So I went all the way from a 3 to a 7. That was a great 32-year career for me. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm not even going to go undo it. There's a lot of reasons for why I wasn't promoted, but, well, the main one was I wouldn't buy the party line and, you know, do all the little favors.
Yeah, I know how that works.
Well, what I was going to mention about, now this is interesting. This is really, what I'm observing here, this is really one of the very big clues and the very big indicators of a dying empire. I'm retired from out there. Well, they're done with me now. They don't care about me. They don't care if I live, I die, or what.
Okay, we're almost at the end of the segment. You need to get to it.
Okay, we're supposed to get a cost of living raise. We're not getting one this year or next year or the year after. The people working will get a small one. My sister still works. But the military is going to get the biggest one of all. But you know why? When you're a dictatorship like this, like the old falling Roman Empire, they had to keep the Praetorian Guard happy.
That's exactly right. The Praetorians made and broke the emperors.
That's it. That's why they do whatever they could to make sure the military got paid and the military got what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever seen a movie called The Decline of the or The Fall of the Roman Empire, made back in 65.
Mm-hmm.
And had Guinness, and Stephen Boyd.
Yeah, I remember that. Listen, we're at the end of the segment here. I'm going to have to let you go, but I want to leave you with a thought. One of the reasons why retired federal workers are not getting cost of living increases is the federal government has looted the Federal Retirement Trust Fund, the same way they did Social Security, the same way they did the Native Americans. There isn't enough money in there to cover the government's obligations, so they're having to pull back. It's like they spent your retirement funds, and now you got to live with the aftermath. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. I think we're getting some of our audio issues back under control here. See, I even took out a little connector. Before we get back to the phones, a couple of stories real quick. Yesterday we talked about the fact that something like 46% of Americans at some point last year did not have enough to eat, 46%. Now we're finding out a new study by a National Hunger Relief Organization finds there are about just under 290,000 people on Long Island, including 110,000 children, who are at risk of going hungry every single day. So this is the United States of America. We're not talking about some people living in alleys. We're not talking about the homeless. We're talking about ordinary, everyday Americans. After a lifetime of work, they can't feed themselves. They can't feed their children. But we can sure spend money on Israel, and we can spend money on bombs and bullets and all the rest of it. It's just amazing. It's shameful. One more story before we go to the phones here. And it shows you, remember we had that phone call the other day from the woman whose husband had served in the Army of the United States of America, come down with cancer. They wouldn't even see him for 9 months at the VA hospital. He died about 2 weeks ago, and that same week the IRS came in and grabbed her bank accounts. Now we're hearing a story about a homeless shelter in Jeffersonville, Indiana. The only homeless shelter in the city, the only homeless shelter in a 14-county area in southern Indiana. And they're in the middle of a very harsh winter there, and the IRS is closing it and selling it for back taxes. If you ever wondered if the government really cares about the American people, there you have it on a silver platter. They don't. You are here to give them money. And brand new soldiers. And other than that, they don't really give a darn about you. If you can't come up with money or new soldiers, then you are useless and they don't... Please, go away and die. You're just getting in the way of the empire. But we can send all this money to Israel. We can help them build houses in the illegally occupied territories. We can give them millions and billions of dollars for weapons in defiance of U.S. law. But we can't keep a homeless shelter open. We can't feed the children of Long Island. We can't feed the people across America. There is something really screwed up with the priorities of the United States government. When they're going to close a homeless shelter for back taxes, that's sick. That is sick. If there was ever a need for a presidential pardon or a presidential intervention, this is it. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Julio in Illinois. Aloha, Julio. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike Rivero from the land of Lincoln and the mainland. I don't know if you saw this through the news wires or not, but yesterday here in Macomb, I go to school at Western Illinois University, there was a shooting incident, a standoff with a 19-year-old man. Supposedly he applied for the military. He had mental health issues. And there's a standoff. Pretty much everyone left the store. The kid committed suicide after 5 hour standoff. But what caught my eye was a suspicious Department of Homeland Security truck that was given a $18 million Homeland Security grant given to the Illinois Terrorism Task Force in July of 2004. And this was a unified command post vehicle. And I was there yesterday filming all of what transpired from broadcasting here at my school. And, you know, I asked questions about this unified command post vehicle, and the Macomb police chief told me that it was just a vehicle for the officers to keep warm and switch officers in and out. And today okay. I go to the press conference, the morning press conference, and ask a question again. I kept asking, I noticed the satellites on the truck, asked them that yesterday if they were going to, you know, hack in to see the security cameras to find out where the gunman is. And he told me, no, they weren't going to use that. They weren't going to go through any of his cell phone records. And it was just very suspicious. I'm looking at this Illinois Terrorism Task Force 06 annual report. And all the vehicles they have on this report were at this Farm King store yesterday, an armored personnel transport vehicle, a mass decontamination vehicle, an abundance of ambulances, police with rifles, unnecessarily. It was Homeland Security Region Number 9, Macomb, Illinois. I need to get this video out. There's so many lies. I have the mayor of my town telling us information that the cops were lying to us about. I need to get this video out somehow, some way, and I was wondering if I could possibly send it to you somehow.
Well, yeah, go ahead and send it to me, and I'll take a look at it, and we'll put it up on our YouTube channel. But my guess is going to be that, you know, all this money has been spent on the Department of Homeland Security and all of the their fancy little vehicles and all the rest of that. And so because we don't actually have a lot of terror actually happening in the United States, anytime something happens, they're going to take every piece of equipment they've got in order to justify the money they spent on it. And, you know,
Where can I send you this info? Where can I send you the video?
Use the address that's at the donation page at whatreallyhappened.com. Up on the bar it says donate. If you go over there, there's a postal link for people who want to send us packages. Okay?
And all these false flags attacks that have been going on has been either police or military personnel related. All have had mental issues. This kid was arrested a couple months ago, had mental issues. The city knew about him. His mom said he was suicidal thoughts, and no one took action. The mom tried to speak with her son yesterday a couple of hours into the standoff, and the cops wouldn't let her. The kid died, committed suicide, and they're trying to cover this up.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, you know, and it's like the crotch bomber, where now we're finding out the U.S. intelligence agencies told the State Department to let him keep his visa so he could get on the plane. It's really absurd. We have to let you go. We're running out of time there, Julio, and we're going to switch over to Frank in New York. Aloha, Frank. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Ah, good evening, Mike. I just wanted to mention that it's not the first time that the statistics regarding employment and job growth have been manipulated by political regimes. If you remember Ronald Reagan's administration, they changed the definition of unemployment when we had record numbers of unemployment and the highest double-digit prime interest rates, if you'll recall. And what Reagan did, they said that anyone doing volunteer work for an hour or more a week that was on unemployment would not be considered unemployed. So actually, it's a long-standing policy for the governments to always manipulate those figures, considering that that determines, in a sense, how much capital will flow into our capital markets and our financial instruments globally. And I think that's one reason, too, why the Plunge Protection Team was created under Ronald Reagan. It's actually Goldman Sachs, and it was also Lehman Brothers and the Federal Reserve that was used to artificially inflate the stock market to buy stocks as the former specialty firms did, whereby their only purpose was to buy stocks when the market was actually going down. In fact, using their capital to put in 1 or 2%, up to 5% at any one decline. So we don't hear much about those firms anymore. They've seemed to have disappeared with the invention of the hedge funds. But
Goldman Sachs is still definitely a major player.
And they're still part of the Plunge Protection Team.
Yes, they are.
Carlson sort of was managing when he was also Secretary of the Treasury under Bush, which also talk about a conflict of interest.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's in a very incestuous arrangement. They're just going in and out of these different offices, and they go back and forth to the private banks, and they set things up where they're reaping huge, huge profits, and the rest of the country is withering on the vine and starving around them. And it's definitely corruption. And I know it's been done before, but that's not going to induce me to cut Obama any slack for continuing to do it.
Oh,
I have had it up to here. Yeah,
I agree with you, Mike. One thing I wanted to say about New York is that according to Mayor Mike Bloomberg and the city of New York, they know that of the 9.8 million New Yorkers, about 1.2 million are having difficulty, you know, providing food for their families.
That's a good number. We got to let you go. We're going into a commercial break, so I'm sorry. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
But this country is coming due. I sure would like to know if they don't do something by and by. The rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And Aloha America, welcome back to the show. And to sort of finish what Frank in New York was trying to tell us before we got cut off by the commercial break here, he's basically saying that the government of New York is very well aware that in the New York metropolitan area, that approximately one out of every eight New Yorkers is having extraordinary difficulty just meeting their basic costs of living. And we understand this. We have been seeing this accelerating for the last 10, 20 years. You know, your income only goes up a little bit. For most of us now, it's in decline. But the cost of housing has gone through the roof. It's run up by the speculators and by the mortgage-backed securities and by the derivatives and all the... Wall Street continues to change the economic structure of this country so that everything that you buy costs more. Gasoline costs more. Homes cost more. Food costs more. Remember how the price of food skyrocketed when they started saying, oh, we have to take farmlands away from American food production and turn them over into ethanol production so we can grow more fuel for the car, which turned out to be actually more expensive. It was not carbon neutral, and it triggered a food shortage and food price increases. And we have to remember something that's kind of a little whammy here. The government loves it when prices go up for you, because it means the companies that you're buying stuff from pay more in taxes. States love it because if they're charging a state sales tax, which is the norm for most states, their tax revenues go up. They love it when you're being gouged by the gas and the food and the market and the real estate and the rental and the health care. They want prices to go up. They don't want you to have money in your pocket. They think the money is supposed to be in their pocket. And they don't care what happens. So we're all caught between the rock and the hard place, between we're functionally all as a nation. For the bottom 80%, we're on fixed or declining incomes in a country where the price of everything is going through the roof. And now that the dollar is collapsing in a society that imports a great number of their products, we're seeing prices go right through the roof here. It's the beginning of the hyperinflationary spiral. And it's all the fault of the federal government and the Federal Reserve. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Doru in Calgary. Aloha, Doru. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Aloha, Mike and everybody else. Just in conjunction with just what you said earlier, when you round up everything that's going on, I urge you to please to use your knowledge and educate us about, again, as you displayed it previously on your website, educate us again about the root of the problem, the Kennedy's, I forgot the precise technical name, the 11110.
The executive order, 11110.
Which was canceled on the airplane by Lyndon Johnson. An emergency it was. And let's face it, the Federal Reserves are owned by Rothschilds. They are the heart of our problems. And I would like you to, I urge you to make people understand that indeed, in the fog of all those technical names, derivatives, what you have, which I personally don't understand fully, but at the heart of all is a country, believe it or not, not only that it's called capitalism after money, capital, but also it has a private company, the Federal Reserves, owned by the Rothschilds, which are selling
us money.
They
own part of it. They don't own all of it. There's a whole gang of thieves in there.
But they have a major influence. Nevertheless, right?
Yes, they do.
And in conjunction with that, think about, we as a country, we buy money from a private company?
It wasn't supposed to be that way.
Yes, it's such a nonsense, such an aberration of a spirit of a nation, that I urge you to nail that as a foundation of all thinking of Americans, to realize where all it's coming from.
Well, you're absolutely right, and let me get in here and finish this, because we're almost at the top of the hour, and I've got one other caller I need to get to before we get to the news break here.
Thank you. You're
absolutely right. When the United States of America was founded, one of the very revolutionary things that they did was they said the U.S. government will issue the money. This idea of kings and queens and parliaments going to a private bank for the money had become the accepted norm in Europe. and it was making the bankers very, very wealthy, and it was driving the ordinary working populations into permanent poverty. And Ben Franklin saw this when he was the envoy from the colonies to the court of King George III. And so he decided when they came back and they had the revolution, they said, okay, we're going to try something very different. We're going to have the government issue the currency free of interest for the people to use, and we'll make sure there's enough money in circulation where there's full employment and there's prosperity for all. And that's what they did. And the banking families of Europe just had apoplexy because this was such a radical and dangerous idea. It threatened their permanent hold over the crowned heads of Europe. And
absolutely.
So the private bankers immediately set about to convert the United States into the same system that they had in Europe. And they went in and they bribed Congress and they bribed politicians and they did the rest of it. And we've had three of these private central banks, and all three of them have brought this nation to the edge of ruin. And we have had, fortunately in the past, presidents with the moral courage to try and do something about it. We had Andrew Jackson, who shut down the first private bank. We had Abraham Lincoln, who issued his own greenbacks to finance the Civil War rather than enslave America to 30% interest from the private bank. And finally, we had John F. Kennedy's Executive Order 11110, which ordered the reissuing of a new version of the silver certificate. And he put about $4.5 billion worth of this new currency into circulation, which meant Americans could go about their business without having to go to the Federal Reserve. All three of these presidents had the courage to stand up to the bankers. There were attempts on the life of all three of them. Two of them succeeded. And as our caller mentioned, as soon as Kennedy was dead, the U.S. notes were pulled out of circulation, and we were sold back into the slavery of the Federal Reserve. The same thing with Abraham Lincoln. As soon as he was dead, the greenbacks were pulled from circulation, and we were sold back into the hands of the private bankers. It's the same pattern over and over and over again. The bottom line is that Obama could turn this economy around right now by picking up the phone and exercising his authority as the President of the United States, call across the street to the Treasury building and saying, I am ordering you to start issuing a new U.S. currency that is unconnected to the privately owned Federal Reserve system. And he could put this money into circulation for us to conduct our business, and the economy would turn around immediately. Obviously, the fact that he will not do so, that he will not fulfill the office of president as defined by the Constitution, basically tells us that Obama is another owned puppet. And he, you know, and there's a stronger word I could use there, but the FCC would shut down this radio station. But the bottom line is that as long as we have a government that continues to sell us into the hands of the private bankers, we will live in poverty and squalor and permanent debt, because that is the way they enslave the masses. The fundamental flaw of the Federal Reserve system is that the instant that first Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the banks than is actually in existence. And this is what their enslavement of our society is based on. And also, obviously, this cycle of constant recessions, depressions over and over and over again is the inevitable, inescapable effect of the reserve banking system. Because sooner or later, that accumulated debt catches up, and there isn't enough money to pay it. So the bankers come in, and they squeeze and squeeze and squeeze until they can get as much out of you as possible. They sell you your home for a high price on credit. Then they buy it back from you in pennies on the dollar when the economy crashes. Then they turn around and sell that same home to your children for very expensive and a high-paying mortgage. Then they buy it back from your children when the economy crashes for pennies on the dollar. Then they sell it to your grandchildren. It's the same scam over and over again. Georgia and Texas, I apologize. I've left you very little time here. But let's start now, and then if you would hold through the news, we'll pick you up into the second hour, okay? What's on your mind today, George?
Well, I talked to a lot of people in Russia,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they may not be doing too well, but I can tell you one thing, they're holding their own, and they're just telling us about the dollar crash, or the government collapse. They're telling me, don't worry about it. You'll be able
yeah.
to pick you'll be able to pick yourself up.
That's exactly what they did, and you know, we keep hearing Russia may not be doing that well, but the Russian republics have paid off all their debt. That's something the United States cannot even begin to pretend to do. And yes, we need to learn from what Russia did when the USSR collapsed, avoid their mistakes, learn from what they did right. George, thanks for the phone call. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 6 minutes. Aloha, America.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And, you know, it's funny. I was listening to the news broadcast here talking about that $1.9 trillion lift on the official government's debt ceiling. And, of course, we know there are other forms of debt that don't cover that. Unfunded liabilities, various other sort of internal obligations and so forth and so on. We know that the real total aggregate government debt, when everything is all cashed in there, you know, it's at least the 20-some trillion dollars that was made available during the bailout. So that's the real scale of government debt. And if they don't get it back from the banks and from the automakers, which isn't likely at this point, you know, it's simply assumed that we, the American people, are going to very happily and gladly pay it off. I don't know if that's it. But when I'm hearing about this $1.9 trillion, and all of a sudden flashed in my mind that wonderful scene from the movie Ben-Hur, the color remake with Charlton Heston, where the commander, the Roman commander of the galley, he comes down and he says, "We keep you alive to serve this ship. Row well and live." And that's almost what it sounds like Congress is saying to us. We keep you alive so that you may give us taxes. And as soon as you're not able to give us taxes, we're going to throw you overboard, which is certainly what's happening in the streets of America. If you're not able to pay taxes, you're out in the streets. Like I said in the last hour, the IRS has just shut down the only homeless shelter in 14 counties in South Indiana, I think it was, for back taxes in the middle of a very harsh winter. You want to talk about a dictatorship that is absolutely insensitive to the plight of their people. That's it right there. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. George in Texas is still on the line. George, what else is on your mind today?
I'm going to tell you one thing. We've went from no taxation without representation to taxation without hesitation. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely, and without representation. The government isn't listening to us. The courts are saying we have no, no legal recourse to force the government to even obey their laws. I mean, I look at all the millions of people who march through the streets of America saying we don't want a war on Iraq based on lies. And the government went ahead and did it. They spent all of our tax money on it. The nation is broke now. The nation has been impoverished by all the spending on war. And we know now the war was based on lies. It was an illegal war under international law. It was an illegal war under U.S. law. At least the British Parliament has the courage to stand up and say, yeah, this was not a war that should have been fought, and yet our government is still trying to maintain that the war was right and just, and that for some reason, even though there weren't any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that we should just stay there and go on stealing their oil and killing their people and poisoning their soil with depleted uranium. And ordinary, moral Americans are saying, no, this is nonsense. This is a crime. This is a war crime, and it should stop. And the government is refusing to listen. They're spending all of our money on war and on Israel. They're leaving nothing to take care of us. Yeah, it's taxation without representation. And it's exactly the reason why we threw the last government out of here back in 1776.
Well, Mike, I'm going to be going over. I got invited over to Russia. I'll be going over there in May. And I'm going over there for educational purposes. I want to know how they survived their collapse, how they dealt with the currency, because even though their ruble is worth less than ours, I'm doing a currency exchange because their rubles might be worth more.
Yeah. Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, yeah, and the bottom line is we have to be very careful of what we're being told about life in other countries, because right now we're in the middle of a population decline in the United States. certainly among the skilled classes of workers. I mean, after all of our jobs were sent to India and China, American skilled workers are leaving the country to go to work in these other countries. They're not finding a warm reception there. Because most of the rest of the world views Americans as arrogant and having this sense of entitlement that is not justified. But we're certainly seeing that here in Hawaii. The government doesn't want you to think that things are significantly better anywhere else in the world, or people are going to start leaving. And then the government will have to forcibly close the borders, and then it's really going to become obvious that we've become a dictatorship.
Well, I'm just going over.
So I'm going to be interested in seeing what you see in these other countries. I know from my own experience when I was working abroad through the 80s and 90s that conditions in other countries were nowhere near as bad as the TV media in this country were portraying them to be.
Well, I know one thing. I know this country portrays Russians as a dumb, impoverished buffoons, and I'll tell you one thing: they're far better educated. And they are not to be underestimated.
Oh, they are. They're amazing people, and everybody in Europe. I mean, America is not very well educated. We only speak one language, and our schools have been dumbed down because they spend so much time with indoctrination, and they don't want critical thinkers. Europeans and Russians are very well educated. I've had the chance to work with some really nice Russian people back when I was with NASA. Even in show business, I had a chance recently to work with the actor Andrew Devoff, and years ago I worked with his former wife, Raisa Danilova, and it's amazing how brilliant they are and educated in culture and history and politics and how many languages they speak besides obviously English and Russian. And it puts us to shame. America is love with its own self-image, and it goes back to this thing about we're going to spend all of our time building up our self-confidence, and instead we didn't give the kids anything to be confident about. And really, compared to the rest of the world, Americans are coming across as arrogant and ignorant. And there's some justification for that.
Well, the thing is, I learned just by advice I heard from some Russian people. I say, because like I say, Americans go over there, they're arrogant, they're talking about the war in Iraq, and they get in people's face. And,
yes.
You know, I'm going there as their guest. I'm going to act
yes.
as their guest. And, you know,
The reason I'm laughing, I have to explain this. The reason I'm laughing, I'm having a flashback. Back in the mid-80s, I was working in Europe, and I was sort of flipping back and forth between Italy and Germany. And one time I was in Germany, and one of the senior people at the company that I was contracted out to at the time took me out for the weekend into the countryside, and we went to Herrenchiemsee, which was the island palace of Ludwig III, the Mad King of Bavaria. And while we're there waiting for the boat to take us over, some people from Texas came in, and they were behaving, I hate to put it crudely, like Texans. And I was sitting there with my host and saying, please don't tell anybody else in this room that I'm also from America, because they were just being so loud, obnoxious, and, you know, we got one bigger than that down in Houston, and we're going to do this, and we're going to, and just everybody in the room was just shaking their heads, you know. And that was when I started making a joke about every time I'm going to go abroad, I'm going to wear a T-shirt that says Canada, because I don't want to be confused for the Americans. Because
Viva
Americans are...
Viva Mexico.
Yeah, Viva Mexico. Yeah, everybody thinks I'm a Mexican, so I might as well go with that. And anyway, anything else on your mind, George?
Like I say, I look forward to going there. Like I say, I'm going there as our guest, and I'm just saying one thing: Russians are not to be underestimated. And
no, absolutely not.
And the thing
not.
Is, I might go find a bride there, because the American girls here are pretty much spoiled.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you, I'm so jealous that you're going there. I mean, I'd love to see the Hermitage. And, you know, I got to meet Russians. And let me tell you one more story before you go about this whole propaganda thing. When we were kids, of course, and the space race was really cranked up, and we finally heard that the Russians had sent a spacecraft to see the far side of the moon for the very first time. And in all the American papers, there was this photo that showed this white blob with a barely visible black dot. And they said, it's the backside of the moon. And we were all saying, well, okay, you know, big deal. It wasn't all that impressive. And then years later, when I was at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, I got a classified U.S. government report that had all of the photos taken by that probe. And they were magnificent. And they showed the backside in complete detail. But the American people were never allowed to see that because they didn't want them to realize just how great the Russian accomplishment had been. And when we soft-landed the Vikings on Mars in 1976, and we were very proud of ourselves for doing it, And we hadn't even realized the Russians had already tried, but failed, because that, too, was being kept from the American people. And it's amazing. The Russians have done a lot of stuff. They had radio-controlled rovers on the moon while we were still dropping Surveyor on there. And it really was. Yeah, don't underestimate the Russians. Don't underestimate them or their culture at all. I am so jealous you're getting that trip. Have a good time. Send postcards. We got to take a break. We'll be back with the rest of the show after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. During the break, I was checking out the chat room, the other chat room over at Ustream, and most of the people are very intelligent and thoughtful over there. There's a couple of amateurs and megaphonies in there trying to cause trouble as usual, and I think we'll tolerate them for a little while here, merely as they serve as such a wonderful example of the kind of people that are being recruited by Sustine and company to try and disrupt the blogosphere. Now, as you heard in the news, there was a 6.0 quake rattling the Northern California coast near Eureka, California. We're not getting a lot of reports about damage, but it is significant that there's a lot of seismic activity over there. New undersea volcano appears to be erupting off the coast of Japan. Basically, you know that because you'll have pumice floating on the surface of the ocean and a lot of smoke coming out with nothing else showing around there. And eventually, it'll break through and form a new island, similar to the one that I'm sitting on at this very moment. But what is really significant is we're continuing to see a quake swarm near Yellowstone National Park. Now, for those of you who are geologists, you already know that the Yellowstone volcano, or the Yellowstone Park, rather, is the collapsed caldera, or actually plural, calderas, of numerous previous supervolcano explosions. What do we mean by a supervolcano? Does it have like an S on its chest or something like that? No. What it means, normal volcanoes will leave a cone, like the Hawaiian Islands, like Mount Rainier. That's our traditional conventional understanding of what a volcano is. But a supervolcano is so explosive that it will literally blow its entire mountain apart into pieces, and it will leave a collapsed caldera, a crater behind at ground level, which will fill in. And very often it takes a long time and a lot of study to realize you're looking at a supervolcano. Krakatoa was a supervolcano. When it exploded, it blew itself completely apart and nothing remained. There's a new volcano forming there now, which is being called the Son of Krakatoa. Lake Toba, over there in Indonesia, is the remains of a supervolcano. I think it's something like 60 miles long at its longest point. And the Yellowstone terrain shows the outline of three distinct collapsed calderas. Now, they're mapping underneath Yellowstone, and there's a huge magma chamber down there. There is no reason to expect that Yellowstone will not have another eruption at some point in the future. They happen every 600,000 years that we can tell from the geology, and the last one was 640,000 years ago. So people are getting a little bit nervous, and these tremors that they're seeing, the swarm of volcanoes, they're becoming shallower and shallower and shallower. They're getting closer to the surface, and a lot of people are thinking there may be a new volcanic vent opening up there. Now, fortunately, it's all taking place in a backcountry region. It's away from the occupied roads and campsites and tourist venues of Yellowstone. And it's not uncommon for more seismically or geothermically active areas of Yellowstone to be blocked off from the tourists in order to keep the people safe here. But it's going to be kind of interesting to keep an eye on this, because one of the things that characterizes a supervolcano are large amounts of gases, especially carbon dioxide, dissolved in the magma. not unlike the carbon dioxide you have in a bottle of soda pop. And very often, if you've ever tried to open a bottle of soda pop slowly, the mere act of releasing the pressure at one point will trigger an outgassing through the entire mass, and you wind up spraying the walls of your kitchen, and your mother gets mad at you. So the idea is that, you know, the experts are all saying, and mind you, these are many of the same experts who told us that we were going to warm up the earth here. But the experts are saying basically a single little volcano doesn't represent a threat. It may let pressure off the magma chamber. And under certain circumstances of lava without a lot of gas dissolved in it, they'd be correct. That's what we have down here on Kilauea. It's a long, slow, steady eruption, produces a very smooth kind of lava called pahoehoe. And we don't get much of the really frothy, gas-filled lava called down here. We get some, but not a lot. But the super volcanoes like Mount St. Helens, let me rephrase that. The super volcanoes and any exploding volcanoes like Mount St. Helens, they're typified by a lot of gas. And what happens is it isn't that there's a lot of lava coming up all at once. It's that the lava is filled with gas, and it's literally the eruption. It's fizzing up like that uncapped bottle of soda pop, and that's where the explosive force comes from. So we're going to be keeping an eye on this situation here, as the swarm continues. And if it opens up a new vent, we need to be cautious about these kind of things here. Now, speaking about cautious and not trusting the experts here, the outgoing chair of the Council of Europe's Subcommittee on Health, Wolfgang Wodarg, has said that his panel's investigation into the swine flu pandemic, or at least the press releases for the swine flu outbreak, have found that it was a fake. It was a hoax, which we were telling you here. It was being promoted by the vaccine makers and assisted by the World Health Organization to sell product to you, to sell medicines to perfectly healthy people, which we then found out from the British Medical Journal really didn't do any good. Tamiflu actually doesn't work. You're going to get just as much benefit shoving water up your nose. It was another hoax, just like global warming. It's a gigantic conspiracy to defraud the people of the world of money, to scare governments into buying product they really didn't need. And remember, the World Health Organization, in the spring of last year, they redefined the threshold for what constituted a pandemic. When we didn't see this huge runaway infectious cycle that typifies a pandemic, the World Health Organization lowered the threshold so that they could hold a press conference and say, it's a pandemic now, you've all got to go out and stockpile and buy all the vaccines. And it was all to soak you for money. At a time when our economy was already in trouble, it was a conspiracy between the pharmaceutical companies and the World Health Organization. Remember, the lady who runs the World Health Organization admitted she never even got vaccinated herself. It was all a hoax to get money out of you. Same thing as global warming here. Now, speaking of hoaxes and propaganda, as we've mentioned earlier in the week, it's becoming very obvious that the U.S. government is desperate to start a new war in Iran to distract Americans from the economy, to distract Americans from the already existing wars that are not going very well in Iraq and Afghanistan and Yemen and Pakistan and Somalia and everywhere else that we're pushing in where people don't want us. And we're seeing all this propaganda about, you know, all the bad things that are going on with Iran and how they're a nuclear threat and they're a danger, and pay no attention to the IAEA, that we can believe Israel's intelligence sources that Iran has a Death Star and they're in league with the Klingons, and they're going to bring death down on all of us. Earlier today in Texas, somebody found a makeshift bomb inside a Coke can, and lying right next to it on the street was a Koran. And you see things like this, and it makes you realize that the propagandists in this country and the corporate media really do truly believe that you are all morons. Okay? Because when was the last time you heard of a Christian leaving a Bible with a bomb at an abortion clinic? Or a Jew who's burning up a Palestinian home? Do they leave a Torah there? No, they don't. This is a propaganda trick. The Quran was left there to frame Muslims to try and create a case for war. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network. providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just scratch yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. I'm getting a lot of emails from people living in the western half of the United States because prior eruptions of the supervolcano basically covered the western half of what is now the United States with ash. And they're saying, you know, what do we do if the worst happens? And what you can do is some pretty common sense stuff. You want to have paper painter's masks because they call it volcanic ash. It's actually very finely powdered glass, and you don't want to get that in your lungs. And the other thing you need to understand is if it's accumulating on your roof, it's not lightweight. It's not like snow. It is much heavier and denser, and your building will collapse unless you're out there with a broom continuously sweeping the stuff off like that. Other than that, it's really great fertilizer, and you'd be amazed what your garden's going to do. After that happens. I'm not saying it's going to be a trivial situation should it come to pass in our lifetime, but there's both good and bad in all of these things here. All right, now, a couple of trials are going on right now. Actually, one of them just ended that really underscores that we are in an age of show trials. What do I mean by show trials? Well, show trials are trials put on by a government to prove a political point. And very often, the conviction and punishment of the accused is a foregone conclusion because the political realities of the time demand it. A classic case from history would be Bruno Richard Hauptmann, who was the man accused of, tried for, convicted, and sentenced to death for the kidnap and murder of the Charles Lindbergh baby, the little eagle. Since his execution, a lot has come out basically that the evidence was fabricated, that Lindbergh lied on the witness stand and identified Bruno when it was impossible to do so. And it's a very long, complex story. I'm actually in possession of some inside information where the baby was actually killed by accident in the household by Anne Morrow, Lindbergh's sister, who was confined to a mental home thereafter. And there had been standing orders in the household that the baby was never to be left alone with Elizabeth Morrow. And because it was going to be this huge scandal, they staged a kidnapping, and then some con artist called up and said, "I'm the kidnapper, bring a ransom." And the Lindberghs could hardly refuse and say, "We know you're not the kidnappers because it's all a hoax." So they went and they paid the money. And apparently the hoaxer was a roommate at Bruno Richard Hauptmann's residence. And they found some of the money there. They needed to fry somebody for the crime of the century. And Bruno was it. And he was just an innocent victim of circumstance. So that brings us today. We have a jury trial that convicted Afia Siddiqui, a Pakistani woman. Now, this is a woman who was studying and teaching at MIT in Brandeis. This is not your typical, you know, so down and destitute and nothing to lose, they're going to become terrorists. Okay, and she was convicted of attempted murder and assault of Americans in Afghanistan. Following the verdict, you know, she stood up and told the jury, this is a verdict that's coming from Israel, not from America. And here's the bottom line. There was no evidence of the crimes. Her fingerprints were not found on the gun that supposedly she fired at Americans. There was no ballistic evidence it had even been fired. What the court did is they brought in all these wounded and crippled soldiers who just laid on this tear-jerking story about how terrible it was to be in the war zone. We talked about this last week. They brought in this guy who's been, you know, permanently crippled by the war, and he's crying about how these people are trying to kill us and, you know, what a terrible time it is over there in Afghanistan and Pakistan and all the rest of that stuff. Okay, look, if it's terrible, don't go there. They're shooting at you because you're the invader. But they laid on this tear fest, and the jury bought it, and they got all worked up emotionally, and they said, we got to punish somebody for this. And so they've convicted this lady, even though there is no physical evidence whatsoever to support the crime. or to support the accusation. It's another railroading. It's a show trial. This brings us to John Dunyanyuk, who's over in Germany being tried for being a guard. And I am not kidding. That is exactly the crime that they're able to prove that he did. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with this, John Dunyanyuk was originally Russian. During World War II, he was taken prisoner by the Nazis. Now, because they needed regular Nazi troops for the front lines, prisoners were turned into trustees. Dunyanyuk was one of them, and they basically made him a camp guard. I understand that one of his duties was he fed the dogs. Who horrors, he fed dogs. Now, Israel extradited him once already, and they tried him for being Ivan the Terrible at Treblinka, and they convicted him, and they sentenced him to death, and he was waiting to be executed when evidence surfaced that it had been a monumental case of mistaken identity. And they let him go, and he came back here to the United States. But Israel wasn't done, because, you see, Israel depends on this illusion of infallibility for all things Holocaust. You can never question anything Israel says about the Holocaust. Yes, there have been embarrassments about the soap claims and the lampshade claims and various scientific evidence. You know, ground-penetrating radar, Treblinka cannot find all the mass graves that are supposed to be there. It's showing undisturbed strata laid down by the last ice age. But when Israel says somebody is a Nazi war criminal, it has to be so. It is such a serious accusation that even innocence cannot be allowed to be a defense. Because if Israel has made a mistake with Dunyanyuk, then have they made mistakes with all the other people that they've accused of being Nazi war criminals? And so at the behest of Israel, Germany has come back and grabbed Dunyanyuk, and they've extradited him to Germany, and they're trying him for being a Nazi camp guard at a different camp now. The Treblinka thing is bust. Now they've got over at this other camp. All they can document is what he himself has already stated. He was taken prisoner by the Nazis. They made him a trustee. And apparently the trial is not going very well, because one of the first witnesses they have here is this expert on the Holocaust. And he's up there saying there's no need to prove Dunyanyuk did anything at all. Just the fact that he was a guard at the camp is bad enough. That he was a cog in the death machine. Now, under that same logic, the doorman at the U.S. Congress is equally guilty of the war crimes committed by George Bush and Barack Obama. The doorman at the Congress is equally guilty for the torturing to death of innocent Iraqi prisoners who were tortured to death to find weapons of mass destruction we now know never existed. Now, do you think the doorman ought to be punished for the war crimes of George W. Bush or Barack Obama? I don't think so. He may have questionable taste being the doorman at the U.S. Congress, just as Dunyanyuk may have had questionable taste agreeing to be a trustee for the Nazis who'd taken him prisoner. But that's not a capital crime. And yet, in this German court, they are trying to sell the idea that anybody working for the Nazis is automatically guilty for genocide against the Jews, even if they can't actually prove any of it really happened. Now, I would have thought, in the wake of World War II and Hitler, that Germany would have the highest of high ideals of truth and justice and fairness and avoidance of exactly this kind of guilt by fiat that was the highlight of the Nazi regime. But it seems that the German courts have returned to the very worst behaviors of the Third Reich here. And John Dunyanyuk is going to be sacrificed on the altar of Israel's illusion of Holocaust infallibility. Israel has said he's guilty and must pay. He's going to be declared guilty, and he'll be made to pay, even if he is innocent of any wrongdoing, even if they can't prove anything, even if they've already made a mistake at one time in the past. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
America, welcome back to the show. Last segment of the show today. My goodness, it has flown by. I've got so many things I wanted to share with you. I'm going to have to pull some of them over into tomorrow. Now, if you go out on Twitter or Facebook or MySpace and you start looking around, you will see a flood, literally a flood of these posts and tweets and whatever that purport to be from Iranian Democrat or democracy protesters, activists, whatever. And they're trying to create the illusion that there is a large and growing segment of the population in Iran that does not like their government and wants to get rid of it. Just like here in America. And that this is supposed to be part of the reason why that we should do these people a favor and go in and kick out that dastardly Ahmadinejad and put in a government that will be much more acceptable to these Iranian democracy activists, ignoring the fact that out of the last 30-plus times the U.S. has military intervened in another country, the government we put in is never well-liked by the indigenous population. Ignoring that thing aside. And ignoring that just a year ago, we were seeing exactly the same stunt, where we were being flooded with propaganda that, oh, they're, you know, never mind the fact that Ahmadinejad won the election by a huge margin. Boy, most Iranians, they don't like him and they don't like the government and they're just striving for a new government. And, of course, we had all these protests about free Iran this and free Iran that, and they were all given flags to wave and not. Very many of them realized the flags that were being given were the flags of the Shah of Iran. And then, of course, the son of the Shah shows up and said, I'm ready to take charge here for the new government, which basically blew the lid off the fact that this was a repeat of the 1953 CIA-backed overthrow of the elected government of Iran and the installation of the dictatorship of the Shah, which led to the revolution of 1979, and the U.S., never one to take a hint, after being kicked out of a country, is now trying to go back in and either invade or overthrow or destabilize. So that brings us to the present day. All this propaganda all over the Twitter space and all the rest of that is just that. It's propaganda. Okay? Because the actual studies going in with polls from the Iranian public from three different individual sources shows that there's very little evidence of any kind of a groundswell of opposition to the Iranian government. It's another propaganda campaign leading to another CIA-backed overthrow. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Carol from Florida with an update about her situation with the Internal Revenue Service. Carol, aloha. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Aloha, Mike. Well, I'm a little bit tired right now, but I'll update you now, maybe a bit more this week. Right now, I'm still fighting with different departments in the IRS, and I filled out a 9423 collection appeal request. And so they're supposed to respond to me within 2 days, meaning I have to hang out at my house for 2 days waiting for them to call because it's an action that they work quickly with. And I could still get a lawyer at any point. You know, this is not ruining any of my case. I had no idea that there was such a option that I could work with them. And I still have one more opportunity for one more appeal even before a lawyer while I look for a lawyer. Basically, they levied an account of a terminally ill man. He was alive when they levied it.
Yes.
They're trying to put it now towards a will or if we have a marriage license or not, you know, and or common law marriage or not. That seems to be where they're pushing everything. But the real reason, thing that they did was they levied an account of a terminally ill man, and that's what I feel that we should be focusing on.
Well, it's not only that they levied the account of a terminally ill man. They levied the account of a military veteran who risked his life and may have lost his health in service to this country. And it's like the story, I don't know if you were listening to the first hour of the show, the IRS has just shut down the only homeless shelter in a 14-county area in South Indiana. And is shutting it down for back taxes in the middle of a harsh winter. Some 60 homeless people were living in that place. They're all going to get kicked out into the street in the middle of this absolute killer winter. And as I was saying, the point that I am hitting here is that anybody who thinks we have a benevolent government that cares about us, this is the wake-up call. If we're not able to give them money or brand new soldiers, then the government has no interest in us whatsoever.
Right, and I'm taking pictures of the flowers sent by family and friends every day, and the petals are falling off by the memory picture because I still have to wait. They won't even release funds for funeral memorial.
Well, you know, I think the sooner you get a lawyer who knows what they're doing, and I emphasize that because the tax code is such a mess, and a lot of people think it's to sort of help obfuscate the fact that the income tax may actually be illegal. They can't even document that the 16th Amendment was really ratified. And the tax code is so complex that when you call the IRS's own helpline, one-third of the time you're going to get bad information.
Yes, and
so.
I'm sorry. Yes, I did talk to a few people at some of the legal services, you know, for legal aid, as you had suggested. And I'm finding out nobody really knows what they're doing. And right now I still have a man I'm waiting for who's in another state who studies federal law, you know, federal tax law. That might be someone who could help me. But at the same time, I have to keep looking for somebody. But everyone only knows a little piece of it. And they don't really know what
you're in a really, really complicated mess. Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully the Internal Revenue Service will respond to your change of collection situation where they're going to back off the lien and you're going to at least have enough money to stay in your home and start to pull this thing together. And all we can do is really hope and pray for the best for those who are into praying, okay?
Yeah, thank you. And I did a lot of sacrifices past 6 years to keep him happy as he was terminally ill, because that was what he was diagnosed 6 years ago. But we didn't know he'd live this long. Even the doctors were surprised, you know, that we're happy that he lived this long.
Yeah, that's a blessing. I mean, you know, doctors will very often be very pessimistic in their prognosis.
Well, his was pretty pessimistic.
Yeah, well, my mother went through the same thing. They gave her 6 months, and she hung on for 3 years. And I think the reason they do that is that if they say you've got 1 year to live and you die at 8 months, they're going to get sued for malpractice. But if they say you're only going to live 3 months and you live for 8 months, everybody is so happy at that outcome that they avoid the lawsuits that way. So I think these the doctors tend to be very, very negative and pessimistic, and they're telling you what's going on because they want it to be a happy outcome so you're not screaming when the medical bills show up.
Yeah, and there are other medical issues that were going on that my husband did not agree with that happened to him in the hospital, and I'm supposed to be focusing on that information. I wanted to address those problems that had occurred that may have led to his quick demise.
Okay.
And I can't.
Was this at the VA or private hospital?
VA.
At the good luck bringing a lawsuit against them.
I don't think I will be able to, but I wanted to just tell them that there's a few flaws that they're making. You know, they should turn off the antibiotics when you say someone's having reaction. Not wait 30 more minutes. You know, someone's turning red and their ears are ringing. You can go right now.
That's a warning sign there. Well, you know, I don't know if you were listening when we did the story where something like 1,500 veterans have been exposed to HIV because they weren't sterilizing the proctoscopes in between examinations. They were just going from one butt to the next butt to the next butt with, I guess they'd wipe it with a tissue or something.
Yeah, and now
all these guys are down with HIV and hepatitis and all the rest of it.
Yeah. And, you know, his oncologist and all the oncology team and any of the surgeons, they were all very wonderful. We're not going to cut down the VA wholly, but there were some things in-house in the hospital when you're administered in there or admitted to the hospital, which were definitely negligent or just not overlooked. And I want to go spend time up there and talk to them about it, but I'm too busy trying to pass all these papers.
Yeah, you got to deal with the IRS first, but
They're asking me for more information about things that, I mean, I gave them my whole life so far, and they're still going, nope, we're not giving the money.
Well, you're going to have to go to one of those tax resolution services. I mean, it's either that or get some canned foods and shotguns and hold up in the home like the Browns did and, you know, wait for the marshals to show up. I wish I could be more helpful than that.
I know.
Ever since your phone call, I have gotten so much email and so many phone calls from people who are exactly in your circumstance. The reason we see all those commercials all over TV for the tax resolution services, it is a huge epidemic problem. The government has taxed us all into the edge of poverty. We don't have the money they're demanding from us. Carol, give us a call next week and keep us up to date on what's going on with your story, okay?
I will. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. All right. Well, that's it for our show today. We're going to be back tomorrow on Friday at 5 p.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. So until tomorrow, aloha, America.